All right, 4-3-1. 4-3-1? 4-3-1, yes.
Are we at 4-3-1 already?
We are.
Gosh.
Already.
That means it's been 31 weeks, actually, and more, since we did our 400th episode.
That's exactly what that means.
That's creepy. Hey, man.
Okay.
Don't take. Just saying facts, okay?
Just doing counting. That's all. Can't argue with the maths.
No, man.
It's true. All right, then.
Shut up. Just get out. Cease the podcast and leave your room. It was just a matter of saying.
Oh, that's funny. Like, I have to say the number now, Em. I can't say the number without laughing and thinking how it is just 19 episodes before 450. 29 episodes before 460. Right. Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode...
It's not that funny.
It's not even funny.
No, it's not even funny. I was just saying facts.
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 431. My name is James Gilmore. And joining me today, it's Emily Numbers Soden.
It's not fair. No one has any idea what we're talking about.
No, I know. This is about the third attempt for me to get through the saying the beginning without laughing like an idiot. I don't know why you tuned in this week. We've got no show. I'm not interviewing anyone and there's no games out. So, what do you want to talk about, Em?
State of political things? Brexit?
Oh, good. Oh, yeah, good. That's never controversial or massively depressing. Oh, no, wait, I was looking at the wrong page. There's actually millions of games this week, loads of really big ones and good ones and news, and we've interviewed Ken Wong. You know the guy what helped design Monument Valley, that little game? Well, he's got a new game out called Florence, and we've both played it. And, oh, there's loads of stuff to come. That, Bayonetta, out on the Switch, 1 and 2. Games about 4X strategy, which I don't play. Polytopia, we're going to talk about an update. And I suppose the big thing that appeared at the end of last week and the beginning of this week, PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, is come to mobile.
Sort of.
But only in China. But I've played it, and you haven't. So let's talk about it.
It's the pitch.
In the news. So yes, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds. I am not a player. Unknown's Battlegrounds. Of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It's that PC game that got really big, and now it's on Xbox One, and people are complaining about it not being as good. But I've now played it on the mobiles, because it's been launched in China, the official PUBG app from the real PUBG guys. We've had a bunch of imitators, some pretenders to the throne have appeared on mobile, because it's the big thing, so we've got to have 20,000 copies. Rules of Survival was the sort of biggest one that we've seen over and that people quite liked. And having played both of them now, it's like, wow, Rules of Survival really was just straight up copying PUBG, wasn't it? But with the help of the Google Translate app held over the screen with my other phone to understand the menus.
That's just meta. That's so meta.
It was me looking through a phone at my other phone while Google Translate turned the words into English. It's quite good, actually. That's the first time I've used that app where you just hold the camera up to a sign and it translates it for you.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's augmented reality. It's really good. Gosh. I'm very impressed. The translations, slightly less good. I still had to kind of work out. There's a lot of talk of chicken. Remember we looked at the comments on PUBG and it was all banging on about chickens?
Well, that's because when you win, like, when you beat everyone else and you become the best, that's when you get your chicken dinner.
Oh, I see. All right, I just thought it was a weird translation meme thing.
No, winner, chicken dinner.
Oh, I see. Very good. There's a video up on AppSpy of me playing basically my second PUBG game. Posting that publicly online was naive, I think. It's actually been quite good, the response, apart from people saying, do you even heal, bro? To which the answer is no. No, I don't heal.
He lives on the edge.
I don't know what the heal button was, and it's all in Chinese. So I was just basically trying to fumble my way through and not die. But I killed two people, Em! Two people!
That is very impressive, to be fair.
I thought so, even though one of them was just standing still for like a minute. But the first one was moving around, and I shot him with my gun. And you can see this all play out in real time. It's interesting that they've been able to cram the entire game on here. There are bits of it that PUBG players, experienced PUBG players, are saying, like, little elements they've done which are actually better on mobile than on the PC version. Things like it's automatically picking up loot and it lets you do it quicker and it's more efficient, stuff like that. So yeah, that's not what I expected to see. I expected everyone just to hate it. But it's been quite a positive response. I mean, we assume it's going to be coming over to the West.
I know at the moment it's literally just like it's exclusively for China. There's like no talks about it, no potential coming over to the West sort of thing. There'd be a demand for it. There's definitely a demand for it. But whether Tencent decide to, you know, push it over this way is another matter entirely.
I'm positive they will. It'd be mad for them not to. But if you have the ability to get onto another App Store account that isn't in your own region via nefarious means, then you can have a go at it for yourself. If not, check out the video and over on AppSpy we'll sort you out. Now, Polytopia, an update for that has appeared. Multiplayer update. It now allows you to do proper multiplayer. You'll get a friend code. We've got an article up on the site where we're going to be sharing our own friend codes if we play it. I don't, because it's one of these shrunk down 4X style strategy games, like a little mini Civilization. Apparently, the good thing about it is that it's designed to be very accessible and to bring in players who maybe find that stuff a bit daunting or perhaps a bit dry. So that makes it probably the perfect type of 4X game for me.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, I find all the Civilization games and the, like, you know, taking over armies over 1,000 years, I just find it really boring.
Yeah, I would like to give it a go. Like, I never gave it a chance just because it wasn't really my cup of tea. But I would like to give it a go. Especially now that it's got multiplayer thing. I always find playing against other people more enjoyable.
Yeah. I feel like it's one of those failings. There are certain things that I don't like, or I feel like I should like them. I mean, my tastes are broad, and I like loads and loads and loads of stuff, but like there are a few things. I don't really like sushi. It's about the only food stuff, like international food stuff, that doesn't do it for me. I can eat it, I just don't enjoy it. But I feel like somehow it's a failing in me. I feel like I should like it.
It depends on what sushi, though.
It's good stuff. It's good fishy bits and rice. I like all those things, but I don't like the way it's put together. I don't know why. And with gaming, when it comes to these kind of strategy style games, especially the conquering stuff, I don't have that Napoleon thing where I want to take over the globe and crush everyone else beneath my tread by amassing armies and moving them around over a period of 50 hours. I don't know why. That just, to me, that's as exciting as working on an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, maybe you're just a gentle wee lamb.
Well, I'm not, because I love horror and I love ripping the limbs off of people in grotesque and disgusting ways. I'm, you know, clearly psychotic, like most gamers are, because games make you psychotic. Isn't that right? The Daily Mail. But in actuality, like, I it's not the violence aspect of it. I just find it boring and slow and I don't gain the satisfaction. But I feel like I should. I feel like it's a genre for smart people. Maybe it's just a genre for tedious people who like organising their socks into the right colours in the drawer. Maybe it's that.
I do that. What's wrong with that?
All right. How many socks, Em? How many socks before you reach 400 socks?
Get out. Move on to the next topic. I'm leaving.
Well, we've got one of our columnists who does kind of opinion stuff, Susan Arendt, who has written about why this is an awesome game. And the reason I'm kind of bringing it up now and I haven't mentioned it before is Dave Bradley, who's been on the podcast at least once, our kind of overall overlord dude. He loves it. It's his personal obsession, is Polytopia. So you can find it out for free. It's been out for a couple of years, but now go multiplayer and go mad. Finally, we want to mention the Indie Games Contest, which is held by Google Play. We're always kind of big supporters of indie games around these parts, not just because we personally kind of enjoy these weird experiences, not just because of the whole Pocket Gamer Connects big indie pitch stuff that we do where we speak to them. But for me, the indie sector, because it's a couple of people making games on very, very low budgets, you know, the studios are small, you often get weird ideas that are very niche and might appeal to only a few people. But because they're passion projects that are done for very little money, they can kind of get out there. Whereas EA would never bankroll something, you know, some of these weird games, because they know that it's only going to appeal to a tiny proportion. They're just not going to make the money off of it. There's lots of rubbish in there, just like with AAA. But they'll come up with weird stuff that you just wouldn't see anywhere else. And that's why I'm a fan. Which speaks to the winner of this. So there were 20 finalists for the Play Indie Games contest. And the winner is Bury Me, My Love by Playdius, which is that Syrian refugee story that we covered a while back. I forget whether you're playing her or you're playing her husband who's monitoring her from afar.
You're playing her, and then she's messaging her husband back in Syria.
Right, yes. So it's a back and forth between the two of them. It's dealing with the plight of it all and her discussing stuff back at home. And you kind of have to make really awful decisions about what you're going to do to deal with it. It has another, it's kind of like This War of Mine, and with a more narrative-y Telltale thing mixed in. And it's obviously thought-provoking and kind of dark. But also, you know, there's hope in there as well. You know, you're trying to help and provide assistance. And you need to go in with the right head, because it's not like a laugh a minute. And it's certainly not, you know, a shooty game. But it is very well considered and very nicely done, and was the winner. And yeah, the runners-up, which is Old Man's Journey, which was really sweet. I played through that. And Bart Bonte's Yellow, which I haven't played. Have you heard of that?
I hadn't heard of it until I saw the top 20 finalists. And it turns out it's like a huge, huge indie game.
I'm just finding it now. It looks like a... Is it a weird puzzler? Oh, it...
Yeah, it's like a weird puzzler, but like a really... unique mechanic.
So black and yellow, and each level is a different logic puzzle, and you have to work through it. Oh yeah, oh, I'll download this. This is free. I'm gonna have a bash at that. Nice. That's why I do like these lists. Sometimes you can pull out stuff, and occasionally, especially with the indie things, you'll see something you've not seen before. So you can check out our review of Bury Me, My Love. Well, obviously we liked it, and maybe check out the other things in this list. The full runner list is available on PG. Go and have a look. Bury Me, My Love, out now. Being part of a hugely successful studio and working on a hugely successful game is something of a dream come true for most developers. Ken Wong was the lead designer on Monument Valley, but instead of sticking around and making 12 more sequels, he decided to set up his own studio, which is called Mountains. Now, that studio's first game, Florence, is live on the App Store, and Ken is with me today to tell me a bit about it. Welcome, Ken.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on.
Monument Valley was quite a big splash, not just in terms of, well, people liked it on mobile and everything, but it kind of punctured through to a very mainstream appreciation, appearing on, you know, TV, famously being shown in House of Cards. Did you see all of that coming? I mean, how did the original project gestate and get you where you are today?
No, I don't think we anticipated that it would be quite as successful as it was. You know, I tell people before the release of Monument Valley, we thought that, well, I thought that we were making a game for hipsters. You know, us two, as you probably know, was based in Shoreditch in London, yeah, which is sort of hipster design territory. And you know, like us two is this design studio. And I just wanted to do right by those designers. I wanted to make a game that designers would like. And so It's sort of inspired by graphic design and art, and has sort of pleasant colors, and is not really for gamers. It's designed to be something that everyone can access. But you know, we didn't really anticipate that families would get into it, that young children would get into it, and that it would reach this audience that maybe had written off games as being not for them.
It was something of a gateway drug in terms of gaming for people.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, some of the things that we talked about when we were in development was, you know, what if you made a game where every screenshot could be a work of art? you know, worthy of hanging on the wall. Like, what if, you know, there's a big audience out there who primarily come for an aesthetic experience or a narrative experience rather than a test of skill? And I don't think that approach is really, it's not something that's as explored amongst game design.
No, which leads us quite neatly to Florence itself, which is the game that's gone live on the App Store this week. And you talk about visual storytelling and bringing in people who may not necessarily be gamers and into this interactive experience that could possibly appeal to everyone. And having played the first chapter of it, I can sort of see a lot of that design intent in Florence. It's a kind of a romance story that you've got going on there, but it's told in this almost, it's like halfway between like a visual novel, but there is interactive elements, and a lot of the emotion that you're trying to communicate, all of it, in fact, is done non-verbally. So it's all looking at the way the characters behave, interacting with elements of the environment in a very almost mundane way, but it seems like you're trying to find the beauty in the banal.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting way of putting it. There was a sort of a hashtag going around on Twitter a while ago about like how would you describe my aesthetic or my work?
Mm-hmm.
And one of my good friends described it sort of in those terms, like finding the beauty in ordinary things.
Okay.
So maybe that is my thing. I think we're surrounded by tremendous beauty and interest, and maybe video games, because of its ancestry, is the tendency is to go towards the fantastical, to create worlds that have never been seen, and to use the full extent of our imagination, and that's wonderful. And but maybe where I can kind of distinguish myself and do something a bit different is by looking at the world around us and trying to find little interesting things that if I use all of my craftsmanship and my skills, I can find something in there that I can bring to an audience and say like, hey, look at this. Like, look at love and relationships, like an ordinary relationship between a woman and a man in Melbourne, Australia. Nothing could be more ordinary, but I'm going to take you along that journey and make you feel every step of that journey.
I think that kind of stuff makes it relatable. I remember playing Heavy Rain for the first time, and there's scenes where you're just showering, or you're just setting the table, and the same thing recently with Life is Strange Before the Storm. There's a scene in that which is at a dinner table, and all of these things, which, as you say, they're not driving flying hover cars mounted with missiles and into space. They're very ordinary things that we all do every day, but when you do that, you recognize the behavior, it becomes immediately relatable and more intimate. And I felt a little bit of that playing this as well. There's some very nice tricks where she's on the subway, your lead character, and you're on a chat client on your phone, and you're either kind of liking or retweeting, and it's like you can't even really see all of the pictures. You can see like the lower section of the picture, and it's in some ways, it's almost arbitrary with what you choose. I mean, and there might be an effect going on behind the scenes, but the pictures themselves are just like people kind of smiling. It's all of her friends, I assume, like in relationships being all kind of, hey. And I guess it's supposed to highlight the fact that maybe she's sitting there on her own. But at the same time, when you're doing it, it's just like, I could retweet it, I could like it. It's, you know, it doesn't really matter either way, it feels. And that reflects how I use Twitter a little bit as well, which is, this doesn't really matter. This is really daft.
Right. So, well, I mean, isn't that amazing that you came away with everything that you just described? You know, you just described to me this whole paragraph about, you know, this thing that went by in like 5 seconds, literally 5 seconds in the game. And we didn't use any words for that. And that's the fun bit of game design is setting up an interesting interaction or an interesting choice and giving that to you, the player. And you're able to get so much out of that without having to directly tell you what it's about, you know?
Yeah.
And you're able to make this connection between, oh, when I'm on Twitter, that's how I behave. And then you're able to connect to Florence in that way. You're like, oh, I've been there when, you know, Florence is seeing life go by her, seeing all of her friends kind of live this colorful Instagram life.
Part of the visual storytelling trick is also that it becomes very universal. You don't have to worry about localizing it. Even the conversations that take place within the game are done via a kind of little mini game, which is about putting the jigsaw parts of a speech bubble together, which I thought was a lovely touch when they're on their first date, and clearly there are lots of little pieces, and it's a tougher challenge. And as the conversation progresses, the pieces become fewer and more obvious, which is echoing this feeling that, oh, I'm finding it more easy to talk to this person. And, right. And again, that's just a little visual thing that you're doing, and you're not telling people that, but you can work it out that, oh, it appears to be easier now. Where did you come up with that idea?
So that level that you're talking about, the first dates one, that sort of came about sort of in the middle of our production, when we'd figured out a couple of interactions, and it came time to design what's it going to be like in this really important moment when these two characters go on their first date. And I wanted to describe the nervousness that you feel when, you know, you've already kind of fallen for this person, and they're really intimidating. They're so beautiful and they're so talented, and you feel like nothing compared to them. And it was about like looking for a metaphor. And I thought putting the words together could sort of describe that, and sort of putting speech bubbles, like, you know, on the screen as like, and treating them as like actual objects, like, it felt a little odd, but I thought maybe we can pull that off with a bit of finessing. And it kind of changed a little bit along the way. The way in which you have to, like, the type of puzzle it was. It wasn't a jigsaw puzzle originally. But when we arrived at using a jigsaw puzzle and going from many pieces to fewer pieces, that felt like a really strong metaphor. And as soon as we did that, we're like, oh, we're really onto something here. And that level has probably changed very, very little since we first put it together.
One of the bits that stood out for me was when you're moving in, there's the option to start putting your stuff on the shelf, and you realize there's only a limited amount of room. So you maybe, you know, put a toy on a shelf or something that's one of yours, and you have the option to put all the rest of your stuff into storage. But then you realize you can actually take his stuff off the shelf as well if you want. And so then the decision becomes, how much are you going to impose your life on this other person's house, other person's property? How much are you going to take over his space, or are you going to try and make it so it's equal, or are you just going to put one thing up because, you know, it's their flat? And again, you start thinking about it as if it were a real world situation, and you're worried about how someone else might be perceiving you. Which is an odd thing to get, again, from just a game, a little screen that's got no instructions on it. You're not being prompted to do it, and you're not being told that there's a right way or a wrong way. There's no win state that appears to be obvious.
Right. I mean, isn't that, I think that speaks to a fundamental question about game design, where I think a lot of people would posit that games should have goals, and good games should be about skill, or at least about doing things in a correct way. And we've kind of put that aside a little bit and focused on just creating meaning or creating moments. And, you know, there isn't really a wrong way to play Florence. It's very, very easy. It's not about challenge. And I think if people come to the game for challenge, they're going to be disappointed, and that's fine. But I think it's still going to be an engaging experience to some people. And I'm very interested in that audience. I'm interested in what if that audience is actually bigger than the whole of what we consider to be real games, you know, like what if real games is actually a niche? That's actually, you know, most games are actually kind of hardcore, but what if not even casual games, but just interactive experiences? What if there's a huge audience for that? We take on the assumption that anybody should be able to pick it up and connect with characters or have a laugh or reflect on their emotions. And there's so many ways of doing that.
I think people come to the genre, or people come to games like loaded with expectation. As you say, they assume, oh, this isn't for me, or oh, it's just all about killing aliens, or whatever it might be. But I think over the past few years, we have seen a big rise. I mean, Dear Esther was the one that got kind of a large amount of attention that kind of pushed it through a little bit, where it's like, oh, it's just, you just walk around and but it's beautiful. And I think people were like, huh, really? But then you've had a lot more since, where, I mean, just Firewatch recently, you know, that's, it is a game, but at the same time, it's mostly a walking, you know, sim kind of thing. And Gone Home also came through as well. And that's very much a short narrative experience where just based on exploration and discovery. And that's kind of it. You're not, you're not winning anything, and you're certainly not competing in any skill challenges. And it does get a little bit of snobbery from a core crowd, but I think it is what you take with you into it. It's very much you're burdened by your own prejudice with this stuff. And I do think you're right that there's going to be people going, there will be people who buy this and go, what was that? That wasn't anything. Like, you know, I could have just watched an episode of something and then it's fine. Where do you stand on that, by the way? Because I've always been curious about... So there are certain games that I've played, interactive experiences. I'm thinking particularly of Virginia, which I played, because I do like these kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
That one, more than the other games, I kind of finished that and went, that didn't really take advantage of any of the strengths of the medium to make me more immersed than I would have been than, say, if it had been an episode of Twin Peaks. I didn't feel like my pressing X to continue the story every few seconds was helpful or immersive to me. So, and that's always the risk I feel that these things run, where you're actually not capitalizing on the strength of the medium that you're using. How do you avoid that?
I once met a great artist and designer called Bay Rate, and Bay Rate is very talented. He worked on Gollum, on Lord of the Rings. He worked for Valve and on their Source Filmmaker program, and he gave a talk at a conference once, and he talked about entertainment minutes. It's our job to create entertainment minutes, and it doesn't really matter what those minutes are, as long as you're entertaining someone and they're, you know, and hopefully they're willing to pay for it, and you can make a sustainable business out of that.
Mm.
And so to me, it doesn't really matter whether what we're doing is truly a game or not really a game, or halfway in between a game and a book or a game and a film, as long as people are entertained and they're moved and they find the time well spent, then we've done our job, you know. And it's kind of a bit of more of a spectrum approach, you know.
Mm.
We talk about TV series. I mean, Netflix is constantly blurring the difference between a TV series and a film, and, you know, some films go straight to Netflix and don't even get theatrical releases. My approach is, if Virginia didn't work for you, then okay. But there are people out there who love Virginia, and for them it was really striking and really engaging in the particular way that it handled interaction. You know, I think it's really useful to set aside sort of an objective analysis and just look at more at subjective experiences, you know. And like, actually, for me, Dear Esther didn't connect at all. I didn't engage with it. But Gone Home, mm-hmm. I loved. You know, Gone Home was a big inspiration for me.
Well, you've kept with the premium model that you guys have used for Monument Valley. I go to a lot of conferences and speak to a lot of investors and publishers and everything. And the first thing they say is, never go premium. It's death nowadays and all that business. Monument Valley, you know, it was one of the rare exceptions, and games like The Room, where it's a premium experience and people are happy to pay, seemingly to the point where the studio becomes successful off the back of it. Was there ever a consideration of like, oh, maybe we could do this in a free-to-play way, or was Florence always going to be a premium thing and that's the audience you're looking for?
I mean, in my experience, it's quite difficult to change your monetization model because, your pricing model, your monetization model, it's not just an afterthought. It's
no.
And it's not actually really about money. It's about psychology. It's about what are you incentivizing people to do as they play the experience, whether that's you're incentivizing them to pay up front, and trusting that you'll deliver on that value, or you're incentivizing them to download first and then hopefully spend a bit of money later, or putting up with ads. So I think it's tricky to change later. We decided from the very start that it was going to be premium. I mean, that's kind of what I know best. I feel like, you know, with my skills as an artist and as a storyteller, what I can do is say, you know, this is going to be an experience worth paying for. A couple of bucks, you know?
Yeah.
I, with my skills as a visual artist, I'm going to make screenshots and a trailer and headlines, which are worth paying for. And I think when you go to conferences and people say, you know, premium is death, I think what they mean is, for the average developer, it's a it's a very tough market. But I honestly think it's just as hard, if not harder, with free to play, because with free to play you're up against the big boys. You know, you're battling for attention from Candy Crush and Clash of Clans, and you know, you got to look at a user acquisition, and more than likely that's a market that you didn't grow up with. You know, you probably grew up with premium games like Mario and Doom and The Sims, and that's a model you're more familiar with. So you probably have to do it a bit of market research and find out exactly how that slightly younger, slightly less hardcore audience is, or less traditional audience, how they behave, you know, and they respond to incentives very different from sort of your traditional gamer. I think a lot of designers of my generation who grew up playing, you know, Nintendo games or PC games, they're still carrying on with sort of ideas that work best with buttons or with a keyboard or mouse.
Yeah, so you get 16-bit platformers with floating D-pads and whatnot.
Right, and I mean, it can be done, but I think if you want to make a mobile sensation, you probably want to look at the platform and its audience and kind of try to take advantage of that.
And Florence is very much taking advantage of that visual novel, the kind of interfaces that we're all used to using now with things like Twitter and Instagram and all the other things. People are just swiping left and left and right. And it just feels very organic and natural.
Thank you. I mean, I take that as a big compliment. And I hope that people sort of, as they're playing Florence, they're reflecting on how Florence is using her mobile phone, and that sometimes you're using a phone within a phone, which I find really hilarious.
Yeah, this odd framing device where it's like just infinity repeating smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, I've really enjoyed playing what I've played and looking forward to finishing it. The game itself is out at the moment on iPhone and on iPad. I understand it's coming to Android soon.
Yeah. We're working on that, and you know, apologies to our Android fans, but we'll get it out to you as soon as we can.
That's okay. I'm sure they're accustomed to the slight delay. It's all right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today, Ken, and best of luck with the launch. I hope it goes swimmingly.
Thank you very much, James.
Out and about this week, you've just heard from Ken, and we've both played through Florence now in its entirety. When I interviewed Ken, we'd only played the first chapter, which was a little pre-release thing that they gave to us to do hands-on. That said, completing Florence doesn't take too long. It is about 30 minutes to play through the game, depending on how fast you move. Em, you've played it as well. What did you think?
I liked it. Yeah, I did. I liked it. I was going to say something about the price just then, but I was like, no, but you know what? A cup of coffee costs more. And it's just a nice, sweet, kind of relatable experience with some lovely graphics and nice music, and it makes your heart feel all sore and then great.
Yeah, experience is the word, because you kind of have to use that. And we cover it in the review. There's a video review up, as well as a written one. And yes, there is interaction, but it's mostly just interaction to make you feel connected rather than trying to do anything that's difficult. It's not trying to test your reactions, really, or anything like that. What it's trying to do is use the interactions to put you in this girl's shoes, to make you feel like you're in her life. That's what they use the interaction for. There are a bunch of people who are going to look at it and go, well, this isn't a game. It's £3, £2.99. And it's over in half an hour, and I didn't really do anything. That's going to be the reaction of a bunch of people, which I get and is valid. But I liked it a lot. It's very sweet without going too like nauseating and saccharine. It dips up and down in terms of what happens. I can't spoil it. It's only half an hour, and you know, don't want to really mention that much of it. But it's all based on her life and how it changes, and when she meets somebody, and that's kind of it. But it is really elegantly done. It's got lots of little moments, even in the half an hour, where you're like, oh, that's really clever, or, oh, I've invested in what happened there. And I talked about it with Ken, little moments of brushing your teeth and things that are boring, that you do every day, routine, that makes you feel connected, because you just recognize it. You recognize it as actual human behavior. And you don't get a lot of that in computer games, because they're always so kind of high concept, and you're often, you know, a racing anti-gravity spacecraft, or you're, you know, flying around on the moon, or you're some, you know, general of an army in the 1400s, or which are all great things. That's why I play games, to experience these weird things I never do. But when you pull it back to actual life and see something like Banal, you kind of go, oh, I feel like I'm identifying with this a little bit more than perhaps I am with being Duke Nukem. Because he's a dick.
This is true. I think that's right on the money. I like the fact that the mini games are so simple, but you get the message like straight away.
Mm.
Like, you know, like this isn't spoiling it at all because it's like right at the beginning. When she's going on like a first date and you have to, you know, match up the little puzzle pieces in the speech bubbles.
Yes, we talked about this with Ken.
Yeah, at first they're like so difficult to do. Like, not difficult, but there's more to do it, and then it gets easier and easier because you get easier to talk to and stuff. That was probably one of my favourite parts. I was just like, oh, it's so good.
It's. I think it's very elegant
in its design solutions,
and it's very economic. Mm. It's not trying to be super clever. It's doing something very simple that is immediately like, oh, I get what this is. Like, it's communicating its message.
And gentle.
Very efficiently. With just a few pieces, and you're like, that's good, that's really clever, elegant design. It is £2.99, and for some people that's going to be like, for half an hour, no. But then again, within the mobile game economy, that seems weird, but within actual economy, that's mental. Literally, that's a cup of coffee, and you drink a cup of coffee in 5 minutes, throw it away and move on to the next one. Like, this is worth more than a cup of coffee, totally. So you can see the review. I don't do any spoilers in it, but I show you a little bit of the visuals. For Florence, which is out right now, let's jump to Switch quickly. Neither of us have played this version of it, but Dave Aubrey has. Bayonetta 1 and 2 out on the Switch, which is exciting because those games are good. I've certainly played through the first one. I haven't played through the second one. I don't have a Wii U. But they've all appeared, and it's, in terms of stats, 720p resolution is what you're going to get for it on the Switch. It's got a little bit of nicer texture filtering than you get on the PC version. If you have it docked, it's dead smooth. If you pull it out of the dock and play it handheld, texture's not quite so good, not quite so smooth, but still better than it is on the Wii U, for example. So it's the best version you can get on a Nintendo console. So we don't really need to review the games because, you know, Bayonetta's been out for ages. So they're both good, and these are good versions of them. Thumbs up, basically, from us on those. Moving on to a video I did on Valentine's Day for Valentine's Day. Because what's more romantic than dating your cat? Perfect Date.
Because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, so another dating sim following on from the Kitty Powers stuff. It's even got Kitty in the title. This is a game where you are cast off onto an island because you're some researcher who's working under this scientist dude who wants to study cats on an island. You're like, all right, fine. You go to this island, and there's no other animals on the island except for cats. All right. Okay. He says, don't go to the south bit of the island. Never go there. Bad things over there. You're like, all right, then. And then you go to sleep on the first night, and then your screen goes all fuzzy. And then you wake up, and there's a whole bunch of cats looking at you, and they start talking to you in English. And then they tell you you're going to become a cat, a werecat, because you've been, I don't know, scratched or bitten or something. And what follows on from there is you start encountering the cats. It plays out as dates. It's a cat dating sim.
Yes. It's unique.
It's certainly unique. To put it in context, it plays more like a novel, like a visual novel. So there's not lots of decisions you have to make. It's you having conversations with this cat, these cats. And it is clearly playing on its absurdity. It knows it's being daft. It's done very tongue-in-cheek with a sense of humour. To be honest, it was quite fun to read it out because I was doing the video and just reading it as I went. And it was quite entertaining to do that. And so clearly it knows it's like, yes, yes, this is all very silly and that's how we're going to play it. It's done really well on PC. It's got a big old cult following on Steam. It's £4.99 or $4.99. I'd suggest have a look at the video. I always say that, but with this one, I think people might download it and go, what is going on? But it's pretty much what it says on the tin.
Yeah, yeah. This time it's like, it's not a fun play on words or anything. It's on the surface.
Yep, it's just dating cats, so there you go. It's weird because I've started playing Doki Doki Literature Club. That one appears to be one thing where it looks like it's going to be one of those ichi dating sim, you know, anime things. But then goes weird. It hasn't gone full weird for me yet, but it's just like the poems that we're all exchanging because it's a poetry club. are getting more and more esoteric and odd, and you're like, okay, this isn't going to end well. Anyway, back to mobile. Death Squared has appeared on mobile. I've just played this morning. You played this when it was on the Switch, right?
Mm, literally one of the only Switch games that I've played for review, which I'm still playing now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So explain to everyone what this one is.
You can either play as one player or up to two players on iOS, but four on the Switch.
Oh, really? And, oh, God.
Well, yeah, it's a party game, isn't it? But you've got to try and solve different conundrums and challenges by moving these little square robots. But as you progress through the levels, they'll start bringing up more mechanics, like pressing a button will like raise spikes and it could kill your other robot, and certain colours can go through certain squares, and it's just very, very good.
Yeah, so it's like a top-down isometric game. You play as these two cubes, so you're looking down on them from above, and the idea is you're trying to work in unison. It's a team game. It's like Portal 2.
Yeah, I do this every time. I've done the
it's
exact
right.
same thing.
Alright, tell us what the game feels like, and then I'll explain what it is. So, the trick is, if you play it as a one-player game, it's like playing A Tale of Two Brothers. No, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. I always get that title wrong. Where it's like, right, you've got one colour, in this case you've got a blue one and a red one, and you've got to get both of them to these two coloured dots. So the blue one's got to go on a blue dot, red one's got to go on the red dot, and then bam, the level is over. And they have to move through a maze. It's kind of top-down, gridded maze. But, as you said, if you move the blue character around, moving him might start adjusting different things within the environment. So if you move him, a block might come out of the wall. If you move him to the left, and if you move him to the right, the block might go back into the wall. So, oh no, because the red character might be sitting in front of that block in the wall. So when you move the blue character, the big block pushes out and then knocks the red one off of the map and falls into oblivion. Which is like, right, if I'm controlling both of these, then I know I could just do, I move this one left and then I'll use this thumb. And it's like trying to make sure the two work in harmony and the one doesn't mess up the other. Whereas if you're playing it two player, it's like, no, don't go, no, stop it. Ah, okay, if you go left and right, no, not left, right. Oh, geez, trying constantly not to destroy the other person accidentally by you trying to reach your goal. So it's a bit left brain, right brain. It's proper challenging. I'm guessing on the Switch you're using the analog sticks, right, to move them?
Yeah.
Right, so you've got floating joypad, what's it on iOS. It's tough.
Yeah, well, it's because you always move in the wrong direction, first of all.
Yeah, they'll do a thing where the characters start on the opposite side of the screen from the analog sticks. So you instinctively just move the left stick to move the left character. And no, that character's over the right side. No, you've fallen off the map.
Wouldn't be fun if it was that simple.
I know. So it's a bit of a headache, but it's very good. Like, I've been really impressed by the level of detail going to the puzzles. When the levels start becoming vertical, when you start having to, as you say, pass through some blocks, the red one can go through the red blocks, but the blue one's blocked by them, and vice versa. So it's a real teamwork thing, and it's frustrating and satisfying in equal measure. We really like it. We gave it a gold on the mobile review, and you can get that right now. I don't know how much it costs, but it is a premium game.
$6.99, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Okay, right, fine. There you go. Well, that's out on mobile right now, but it's dead good. We'll have a video up by now, so go and give it a look. What else we got? Command Control. This is not very good, I didn't think.
No, I didn't even know it was coming out this week.
No. Vertically scrolling shmup, the idea being that you're moving through a maze more than a horde of enemies. So blocks appear, you know, on the screen. There's kind of a wall of blocks, and the blocks have a number on it. And the number represents the number of times you have to shoot that block before it will explode and disappear. It's got loads of ads all over it. It's a bit lo-fi. It's a good idea, but you lose fluidity with it all because you're constantly stopping, starting, and then ads pop up, and it's a bit like, I wasn't entirely sold on it. There's a couple of other things that appeared. Hit and Run, I haven't had a chance to play this one yet, which is a top-down car racing, swerve left and right, lane runner thing, auto runner. Seen loads of these. Might be good, but, you know, shrug. The other one I played is a Nitro Racing Go, which is a tapper racer.
What?
Imagine, you know, just a normal racing game, but instead of swerving, driving, doing anything, you're just tapping the screen, and tapping the screen makes the car go forward, and it's just like, it's just a tapper. Same thing. And stuff happens. it doesn't really matter what's going on in the background with tappers for me. It's just like you just tap the screen loads. That's it. Again, don't get those games, but whatever. One thing I will mention, though, I don't think we mentioned it last week, is Infinite West, which is a strategy game where you are a cowboy jumping around a gridded Wild West-style environment, and other cowboys are there. And it's very... Chess is the closest comparison in terms of the way that the characters move, or the rules that the characters use to move. There's only one of you, but you will get numerous cowboys, and every time you move, they move. But each different cowboy has a different moveset, so you'll get cowboys which have a stabby knife, and they can move in kind of all directions, but just hop one square like a pawn. And then you'll get, like, shotgun wielders, and they can only blast diagonally, you know, similar to, like, bishops can only move diagonally. And you'll get guys which have straight-up pistols, and they can shoot in a long line in one direction, like a rook moves. So it similar rule sets for the movement and the shooting, but the moves happen simultaneously, and there's only one of you, and very soon you start getting ganged up by loads of the buggers. And you have to do things like, if you can shoot one of your enemies... that's great. If you can line up two enemies in a row and shoot the back one, it'll go through all of them, which is very satisfying and great. You'll have stuff lying around the level like barrels, and if you can get them to cluster around the barrel by luring them that way and then dive away and shoot it, it'll take out everyone within a one tile vicinity. And it's cool. It's, again, very challenging once you get to the later levels and you have to start again every time, but I'm really impressed with it. I've been doing a tips video for it, and sometimes the tips videos, if I'm not into the game, can be a bit hard work. Whereas this one, it's just been quite nice to capture footage from, because it's actually enjoyable to play, which does help.
Yeah, usually you'd want to find some form of enjoyment with these sorts of things.
If at all possible. So yeah, that was out last week, and you can get that one right now. So go and have a look at that. Which will take us to the end of the show this week. Thank you for listening and indulging my laughing fits. Sorry about that.
It's fine. I'm used to feeling like a fool.
I was laughing with you, not at you.
Sure. I was laughing internally. It's just, it was such like a, I was commenting on the weeks it has been.
Don't try to justify your counting.
I did. I just couldn't believe it's been like 30 episodes since 400.
It has. Yes. Anyway, thank you for listening this week. Come back and join us next week for more of the same. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.